You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Well, good evening, and good evening to you, and welcome to the Thursday edition of this show. It is Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is the 19th of December, 2024, and one of our biggest segments on this show, it is a shapeshifter. It happens every single Thursday after 7, and today is no different at all. My shapeshifter today is Usisi Mpumi Mbonane. She is the CEO and Purpose Alignment Strategist at Purpose Practitioners Club, who has successfully guided several professionals through career pivots by aligning their personal values with their professional goals. And she's joining us this evening to have a conversation with us. Good evening, ma'am, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Tabelo. What a way to scare me.
Oh, okay.
Segment on our show. Like, oh, little old me. Are you sure I'm the right person? But hey, I'm so happy to be here.
The fact that you are here, I must say, it is in its own. Just a reminder. It's not even just, you know, a confirmation. It's a reminder to you that you're doing very well. So that's why we have you on Shapeshifter. So welcome.
I like that. Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate you. I'm doing well, ma'am. I appreciate you asking. It's the end of the day. I think I've got fatigue for some odd reason. I never have fatigue, but this year, something in my mind has triggered fatigue. Maybe I need a purpose alignment of sorts,
oh,
I think. I went there, right? Went for the jugular, right there.
Do you think year-end fatigue is actually a thing?
That's a good question. That's what I'm saying. It's weird this year that I'm actually feeling it. I think it's something in my mind. It's probably not a thing, but it's in my mind.
Yeah. Also, it's the whole, because there's no country in the world like South Africa who does December.
Hey,
We know that December is festive. You just don't want to work anymore. It's like, I need to get out of here. So I think that's what it is mostly.
I think that's what it is. And you're right. Everyone else is Decembering. We are Decembering.
100%.
So December. That's where we are. See, these are yonke into. I don't know what we are desiring, but we are just desiring everything. So yeah.
Corrupted our core.
And let me not scare you. It is the last show of the year. So the standard is very high. The level is very high. I'm in high spirits. You clearly are in high spirits. So let's end on a bang.
Jesus, take the wheel. Take the wheel, Lord. Let's definitely give it a try then.
Let me give it a try again. She's the CEO. What a way to start.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's definitely very high on its own, right? So we're starting on very high spirits. But welcome, ma'am. Thank you so much for your time. So you don't have year-end fatigue?
I don't know if I do.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if I do. And I don't even know what to attribute that to, right? It could just be because I've aligned myself to work that absolutely fulfills me.
Ah,
or it could just be because I understand that it might just be a psychological construct more than it is a real thing.
I see.
So I don't think I'm year end fatigued like everybody else.
So are you going away? Are you taking some time out?
No, I'm not going away. I'm going to be with family right here at home.
And
that's just it. I don't normally go away in December. Actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Do you have another time in the year when you go away?
I do, but it's very random. It's very sporadic. And I think also it's because I grew up in Soweto.
Oh.
So Joburg is home. So it's like,
Makaya.
No Makaya for me. Makaya is a taxi away at most.
So whereabouts in Soweto were you born?
So I was raised at Jablani.
Jablani.
Yes.
I know Jablani very well. Is Jablani Turkish Sasekon?
Yes.
Oh, look at that. That's really beautiful. I was at Zola 3.
Oh, really?
So Zocha Zem. Zocha Zem. Look at that. You see? Yeah. So I went to Zocha.
Before my time. But yeah. Like, what the full phrase, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
We'll cut that last line. They didn't hear it. yeah. I thought I was young, so, you know.
Sorry to burst your bubble. Your fatigued bubble.
But take us through. You're born then, and how was it growing up in Soweto?
Oh, man. I don't think there is an experience as electrifying as being raised in Soweto.
No,
and I know that people from various townships will say that, right? Soweto is a vibe on its own. And the beautiful thing about it is you don't know how disadvantaged or less privileged you are because we are one calabash.
Yes.
We are one family. We're one big family. I know for a fact that because my mom used to come home from work very late.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even have stress. I wouldn't stay in the house being next door.
Oh.
I'll wait for her to call my name. Sometimes I'm even asleep.
Yeah.
And they wake me up to say, hey, your mom is here. Mm. So growing up in Soweto, I really grew up with one big family. And in the house, though, it was me, my grandmother until actually my great grandmother until 2002 when she died.
Yeah,
and it was my mom and my sister and my brother.
Ah.
And that was home. Everything. Yeah. I had everything I needed.
Ah, okay.
Not to say it was easy, and I think we will unpack that a bit.
Yeah.
But it was home.
Yeah.
And if you don't have something, the neighbors have it.
No, look,
and
I think
so fun with now where you have it because we are all one big family.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was about to say we epitomize, at least I'm a Sowetan as well. So we epitomize that very thing that says a child is raised by the community, because that's what Soweto is,
100%. And you know, I not to bias anybody, right? So I won't be very specific in my description of this, but I've had an opportunity to work with different cultures outside of South Africa. And let me tell you something, for the very first time, particularly in the previous month, I understood the whole idea of South Africans and Ubuntu, or the concept of Ubuntu, because we are really a nation that epitomizes humanity and being for each other and embracing each other. So I think when we think about Soweto, especially as a township, it is at its core because everybody is on equal playing field.
Yeah.
And if you're not, it's fine. At least in Glana Lem, then I was sipped up.
No, definitely. Yeah, exactly.
So by association.
Yeah. That's amazing as well. Okay. And then what were some of the socio-economic challenges that you could see around?
And, you know, like I said earlier, when you're in there, you don't even know
even
that there's anything different, right?
Yeah.
It's not even a socio-economic issue. It's a way of life.
Yeah.
But I was very privileged. And to this day, I don't know how my mom did it.
Yeah.
My mom was a single parent.
Yeah.
Who worked at a clothing factory. My mom used to iron clothes for a living.
Oh, my.
I don't even think she'd make anything over 500 rand a month. But by God's divine grace, I went to some of the best schools out there. I mean,
look,
you can hear
that
it in the English, yeah?
No, the twang is there. Definitely there.
So it was only when I stepped out of my immediate surroundings, when I went to these Model C schools, these multiracial schools, that I actually realized, hey, not everything that I've normalized from back home is normal.
Yeah.
For example, teenage pregnancy is a thing. It looks cheap.
It is.
And you would think, I guess this is how it goes, right? So I'll give a slight confession.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we did grow up in the church.
Yeah.
There's a lady I looked up to so much. And then this lady fell pregnant.
Ooh.
And all of us know that we don't do that, right?
Since
we were babies.
Yeah.
But here's the weird thing. When she fell pregnant, because I loved her so much, I looked up, she was one of my role models.
Yes.
In my mind, I started rationalizing, oh, if she did it, it can't be that bad. And I had to snatch myself out of that hole because I realized what it was going to do to me, right? It's just the thing. It's so easy to get sucked in because it is a way of life. So teenage pregnancy, domestic violence,
hey, yeah.
stigmatized. Yeah. Alcoholism and substance abuse.
Yeah.
Crazy. Illiteracy. Mm. Kids you go to school with. Mm. And at some point, I bought when I wang at a second in every day. And exactly. It's not a Sunday thing, yeah. An after school thing. Next thing, they're picking up trash. They are on drugs. So that the illiteracy that is born from substance abuse and for girls. Just having kids and never going back to school because you've got the reality altogether. Those are the things that I saw. Poverty. I saw absent fathers in homes. So literally that is, and I think I don't even speak for my street or my township or my particular region. Mm. I speak for a whole lot of other African townships.
Yeah.
About these socioeconomic issues.
Yeah, sure. That's amazing. And things like guns flying around as well.
Yes.
It's a normal thing, eh?
100%. You're sleeping and you're like, oh, that was gunshots. No, I wonder who it is.
Yeah.
What it was.
Yeah, it was really, 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 really bad. And for you then personally, right? So those were some that you could see, you could remember outside. You personally, what were some of your challenges growing up?
Oh, as I just said, I was raised by my mom.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At 9 months young, my dad decided to leave my family.
Sure, sure.
So, and it's not even a leave, your booty. No. He left to start a different new family.
Yeah.
So, he left my mom with 3 kids.
Sure.
One, I think, was 16 or 17. The other was 11. And I was 9 months young.
Mm.
And now we are in this home that was a double income home with a father who apparently was so loving. But of course, I never got to experience that because he didn't give me that opportunity or that chance. So being raised by a single mom was really, really challenging. And I know that for overachievers and people who want to believe they've got the better of situations. I lied to myself for a very long time saying, at least I turned out right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is no way that something so earth shifting, because that is my earth. As a kid, my parents are my earth.
Yeah.
I don't know anything else. Yeah. They shape how I think. Mm. They shape how I view the world. And so for one of those pillars to remove themselves, I've now got this whole structure that still needs to stand, but it's standing on the weight of one pillar. Mm. So that was very, very difficult. And of course, I did tell you, my mom didn't earn anything over 500 rand. Mm. And so we really, really struggled. You know, I've got nieces, I've got like 5 nieces. And Shem, I think it's credit to, maybe not credits, but it's a reflection on of the time they are living in.
Yeah.
My nieces have no problem asking their parents for anything, even if they know that parents can't afford.
Yes.
I'm just like, I never, ever, ever put my mom in the corner because I realized, see, if I'm getting amahilis, we're not getting food for the next, I don't know how many days.
Yeah.
If I want to prioritize, it touches the game that everybody else has.
Yeah.
It means I'm going to lack stationery at school. So I learned to make those sort of compromises and sacrifices when I was really just a kid who was supposed to be a big factor of sacrifices that are made without me even knowing. Those are some of the things.
Yeah. So you had to make almost like a trade-off, right? Know what you can and can't have. Yeah. And prioritize what seems to be more important, which would be your education, school. As long as I got my educational stuff, the rest can just, I suppose, one day.
And my welfare. As long as I'm fed, I'm clean, I'm in a home, ogunye nogunye will see it along the way.
Bona pambili impela. And would you say that has shaped who you are today?
I'm so happy you asked me that question because there is no way that could not shape anybody, right?
Yeah.
And I could think about it shaping me in so many different ways. For example, not growing up without a dad.
Sure.
That gave me somewhat of a not so pleasant thinking behind men.
Yeah.
Or towards men.
I see.
Because I've got this idea and this conditioning that men use you and when they are done with you, they walk away.
Yes.
And in reality, that was my father.
Yeah.
It is not necessarily, I'm not saying it's not, but it's not necessarily a reflection of all men that exist.
I get you.
So I think I've struggled navigating relationships for a while because of that experience. And when I talk about the idea of having to do my trade-offs, right, realizing that it's either this or that, it really taught me how to manage my money. And I know we're going to get to that point later. But imagine the idea of, this is what I have right now.
Yeah.
How far can this go?
Yeah.
If it can go far, let's stretch it. But if it can't, let's do what matters right now.
Yeah.
What is urgent, what is important, and what is absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
So really I always say that because of that experience, and my siblings are significantly older than me. My brother is 11 years older than me. My sister is 17 years older than me. My mom was always at work.
Yeah.
So my mom is at work. My brother is Stradini. My sister is at work. I literally, while they were raised together, because they're 6 years apart, I was raised alone.
I was
raised by myself. And for the most part, I spent a lot of time alone.
Eesh.
So my decision-making was sharpened in that time.
My
ability to be with myself and in solitude was sharpened in that time.
Yeah.
The way I think, the way I reason,
my
childhood and my growing up circumstance really shaped me to be the responsible person that I am today.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really, really amazing and inspiring on its own. So which primary school and high school did you go to, and what was that experience like?
So I'm a bit of a fancy one.
Oh, okay.
I went to Westrand SDA Primary School.
Ooh.
Yes.
So you were the envy of all the other kids in the church and all that.
I know all the verses.
Look at that. So
I went to Westrand. And, you know, there was a time, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I remembered a song we used to sing in grade one.
Yeah.
I did grade one in 2001.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I remembered a song and I was just filled with tears, not from the song, but from the thought of, how did my mom know to take the steps she did for the life that I ended up living? My mom had a rough childhood. I am talking being abandoned by both parents. I'm talking abuse. I'm talking being sent from pillar to post. I'm talking utter poverty.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand how she, with that background, right?
Yeah.
How she was able to say, this is going to be the best decision for my child, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So I sat there like, mama. And I think I even called her to say, you built the best foundation for me.
Oh, my.
The best foundation. I even said to her, if I ever lose my way, please know that it had nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
Because you laid a solid, strong, beautiful foundation for me.
Oh, my. I'm sure that brought tears.
It really did. She cried so much. Like, we cry babies. Anyway, so I went to school in West Dean.
Okay.
And literally, there is one big road that separates West Dean from Brixton.
Yeah.
And my high school was in Brixton.
Yeah.
So back then, it was called UJ Metropolitan Academy.
Yes.
But now it's called, it was Rau Khol. No, it was Metropolitan Rau Khol.
Yeah.
And now it's called UJ Metropolitan Academy. It was Rau Khol back then because it was started by Rau University.
That makes sense.
Rau College of Academic Learning and Leadership.
Yeah.
And now Rau changed the name to UJ.
Yeah.
It then became UJ Metropolitan Academy. And let me tell you, that school, before ungena, you write an aptitude test.
Ooh.
So when we first got in the first day, they're like, ha, you were the big fish in your schools, in your little pond.
Now
you are the small fish
exactly
in the big ocean. And you were just like, because literally everybody was smart.
Yeah.
Everybody knew their story. And so put a little pressure on all of us to say, hey, you better get your act together.
Yeah.
But it was such a good school. It was such a great school. A lot of the opportunities that I look back on now and absolutely enjoy are opportunities that came from being in that school. So let me tell you, I got the best foundation made for me. I am not even going to lie.
Ah, that's really beautiful. So did you know then that you wanted to study mining?
Oh, the quintessential question.
That
and
very
I think
one.
When it comes to careers, There's so many defining moments.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, all I wanted to do was to study psychology.
Oh, okay.
But of course, I grew up in Lokshin. So okay. I didn't know what psychology was until I got to grade 11 where the other kids are talking about, physiotherapy. I'm like, psychology. But when I was younger, it was social working. Oh, if you're helping the community, we're social worker.
Okay.
So that's always been what I wanted to do. It was social work until grade 10.
Yeah.
And then it was psychology in grade 11.
Yes.
And child psychology in grade 12.
Ooh.
But then... I spoke, as with every other 17-year-old, 18-year-old, there are people in your ear, which is fair because, honestly, I don't think it's fair to put that much pressure on a 17-year-old to decide what they're going to be doing for the rest of their lives. It's so much pressure.
Yeah.
But in any case, my trusted, loving brother-in-law said to me, what are you, you want to make a career out of listening to people's problems? Something you can do for free in your spare time?
Yes.
And I was like, what am I going to do? Because all my life I've known that I am this person, right? And he said to me, no, you are good at math. You're good at science. You are a brainiac.
Yeah.
Go and study engineering. Now I thought I had never thought of myself as an engineer. Because, and not because I doubted my intelligence, but because EP engineer. Where would I have seen one to know that it's possible to be one? Exactly. So I was like, what am I gonna do? And I took different perspectives from different universities. And I started searching. I looked at chemical engineering. I said, I'm a chemical. Mechanical engineering. Aeronautical. And I was just like, when I thought about a flight, I thought about me. I said, no. Then I landed on mining engineering and I thought, what could be difficult? Going underground. Blasting rock. Coming out with a diamond.
Exactly.
I can do it in my sleep.
Yeah.
Oh boy, was I in for the surprise of my life.
Yep.
It was nothing like I thought it would be. Absolutely nothing like I thought it would be. I thought it would be easy. It was not that. But also I thought it was going to shut down or quiet the aspiration that I had in me forever.
Yeah.
But it really, really didn't. Instead it got heightened.
Yeah.
With every year that I was in university,
it was
clearer and clearer that I don't want to do this. I remember calling my sister in first year, the middle of first year, to say, get me out of here. I know that I don't want to do this. If I can't help people via psychology, at least let me become a lawyer. But I know that my calling has got to do with people directly. Get me out of here. My sister said, no, Bambegazela, you don't want to be like those law graduates who are sitting at home with their degrees. And let me tell you what my sister then did. She furthered her studies in law.
How?
But in any case, that's fine. I guess maybe she forgot the stats in that year. It's okay. I stuck it through.
Yeah.
I stuck it through right till my final year. When I was graduating, it's supposed to be the happiest day of any young person's life, right?
Definitely.
I was walking through that stage thinking, you just got conferred an honors degree in mining engineering. But is this where you are supposed
to be?
And it was a rhetorical question because I knew that it was not. But I had to make the most out of it because I've got this paper in my hand now. So does it become a burden? Or does it become a key?
And
I had to decide.
So during that time with those emotions, what was happening then? What was happening in your mind? Did you want to start a psychology degree afresh now, or what was happening then?
You know, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that question. I don't even think I've asked myself that question, because the reality was, of course, my mom couldn't afford for me to go to varsity. I was there on a bursary, right? So the reality was, if I walk away from this university or this particular field of study, I lose my bursary. I've never heard of any bursary for psychologists. Also because I stopped doing the research when I was told, you want to waste your brain on psychology. And so I didn't even know enough And at that point, it wasn't even about another thing or an alternative. It was about not this. I don't want this. And to be completely honest with you, I didn't know what was going to happen if I had quit. I don't even think I thought that far. I just knew I don't want to be here.
Sure.
How that was going to look, I wouldn't be able to tell you. To this day, I can't tell you because I don't even think I thought that far.
Sure. And how did you then stuck through your intern? I know you did VBCom, for example. Before you pivoted into banking. Did you feel torture while you were at VBCom?
Oh, the worst torture. The worst. It's like where, you know, my story. The way you ask me these questions, it's like you were there.
Something is telling me. Something is whispering in my ears.
One of the worst years of my life.
Oh, my.
Tabelo, I cried myself to sleep almost every night.
Yo.
I hated the sound of the alarm in the morning.
Because
for me, it was telling me that alarm, while it was birds or whatever, it was saying to me, another day of wasting away.
Not in paradise.
No.
No, it's not.
I was withering away. Withering away. And I absolutely hated that. I would sit at my desk thinking, I cannot be developing mines, because I worked in a technical consultancy.
So we were
developing mines, mine dumps, mine roads. It was basically, we were the consultation or the consult, the consultants that an organization or a mining house would come to say, hey, this is where we're trying to go and whatever. I was sitting there thinking, I don't want to be developing mines. People is who are made to develop. I hated that year so much. I think I went through a mild depression in that year. And I know because the things I used to love, I no longer love. I had no interest in anything. I looked horrible. You know, I think they could tell that the way I dressed, my countenance, to a point where I remember sitting in my desk one day and feeling the sharpest pain in my chest.
Phew.
I didn't know what this was. It intensified. I started sweating. I started losing focus, thinking dizzy. I couldn't even see clearly. I needed to rush out of there just to catch a breath. And I don't even know how I got out, but I rushed out to two of the furthest cars from our office block because at that point I didn't have a car. I wasn't even earning enough to have a car. So I ran to those cars in between them and I cried because I didn't understand what was happening. It was very scary. I can't breathe. Sharp pain in my chest. I'm sweating. Didn't understand what it was. And the pain lingered. It didn't go away. I thought, let me go get my heart checked because I don't know what this is. I went to a GP and I said, listen, sissy, I'm struggling. I'm having these chest pains. They come every now and again. And she did all those EKG, ECG, and all those things. And she said, your heart is okay. What is going on? And what I didn't divulge in that moment, because she's not a therapist, she was just doing tests and trying to diagnose. What she didn't know was that I was crying myself to sleep. And I guess what was happening then is that I was having a physical manifestation of a psychological problem. And I didn't know until later that that was my very first panic attack. And now I know what it is, because whenever I'm thrust into a situation where my anxiety is heightened and I have that, I'm like, oh, I remember this. It takes me back to that horrible year where I just knew that I had to make a change. And so I said to God, Lord, my birthday is coming up. And as a birthday gift, I would love to get a different job. And here's the thing. I knew that this because it felt like there was a hole. And there was just a hole. You know, when you're walking around, but you're the shell that has got this hole and everybody can see. Right? And because I felt it so deeply and fundamentally, I was just like, man, it couldn't be filled by a boyfriend or money or anything else. It was an existential problem. I just needed to know, Lord, why am I here? Because this cannot be it. I refuse to believe that with your intentionality of how far the sea goes before it causes a tsunami, where the sun rises and how it rotates around the earth, when the stars shine, with the intentionality I knew you created everything else, it does not stand to reason that me, your most prized creation, can be in such confusion and such mess. If you created the sun for warmth and light, and the sea for water, what am I here for? What is my purpose? Because this, it can't be it. And if it was it, it wouldn't be sapping the life out of me like this.
Did you get your answers from God?
So, because God is so nice, and so faithful, he did stuff in the background.
Okay.
And I started applying for jobs. And I'm saying he did stuff in the background because I knew at that point, if you don't change, nothing will. And so I thought, I'm going to leave mining because I know that I just knew that this is not me. But I don't know where the way is, but I have to land somewhere, right? So I started doing these job searches. And the beautiful thing is, this particular job search, for you to get a code to for that application to be successful, you needed to figure out something. Now I'm in this job that is miserable, but in that very on that very day, in that week, I was doing an advanced Excel course, right? So I'm doing the thing and I'm just like, oh, it will help me down the road, I guess, with this job. But now I'm here on this application, I've answered everything else, and then it says you need to solve for this problem, and when you do, the answer will be a number. Call that number and you will get a code.
I'm
looking at this like, whoa. I think I saw this in someone's Excel course not too long ago. I went back to that rule, that you know, Excel and the many rules. I went
a lot
back
of stuff.
To that rule. I was like, Ibo, 1 + 1, I'm seeing a match here. Did that thing, I got a number. I the phone rang, obviously, because it is the number. I got a code. I put in that code and they said, congratulations, your application was successful.
Just like that.
And that was the first step towards my journey to the bank.
Oh, my.
Now, I want to take a pause here and say, you know, however messy, however directionless or pointless a season is, there is never a misstep. And maybe let's say there is, right? For argument's sake, let's say there is. But when the Bible talks about what the devil meant for harm, God turns around for good. It is no joke. God always has a way of finding us in our pits. He always has a way of getting us out of there. And for me to have done that Excel course at that time where I'd spoken to God about leaving, it was serendipity. It was divine. I cannot point it to anything else. And lo and behold, I got the first call for the first interview. I didn't think I did so well, but when they said, listen, we're meeting you at the Maslow Hotel for the assessment center, I was like, Habashwe.
Ah, bona.
I prepared for that
day. My
life depended
on it.
I got to, because here's the thing. I needed to be fair. I said, Lord, get me out of here. And so I needed to pack my bags. I needed to have everything that I needed for my trip. So it would not make sense to say, Lord, take me to Bali. And then I suggest, okay, I do my atamaya. And I'm just like, ugh. It could never be the case. And so I prepped, and I know that I prepped properly because one of the sessions at the assessment center was a, so they gave us a problem in a group and we then solve it. So one of my research thingies said, okay, in this type of setting, you are going to need a timekeeper, you're going to need that. So we sat on the desk and the adjudicators were like, okay, guys, you've got 30 minutes. Haibo, me saying, okay, guys, before we begin, I think let's divide roles. So who's going to be our timekeeper?
Taking charge.
Who's
now.
Going to be our scribe? Who's going to be... One of the adjudicators moved from the back of the room, came to where we were sitting, and demanded for me to show her my name tag. In that moment, I was like, guys, I don't know about you, but I clenched this job. And that was the one moment. The other session was a presentation. I was there doing a presentation. One of the guys was looking at me with such marvel. I don't think he could believe what was happening. And he later turned out to be my manager when got the job.
Look at that.
And so then one of the sessions was also an interview, one-on-one interview.
Yeah.
So I'm quite a loner because I'm an introvert, right? So I'm quite a loner. So I was sitting there by the reception doing my thing. One of the girls was like, "Hi, Mpumi, everybody else is sitting that side. Let's go. And I went there. Can I tell you what divine grace me going there was?
Sure.
Because I'm sitting there and these girls are chatting. "Oh, guys, how was your interview? What did they ask you?" And the one says, "They asked me about Snapchat." "Oh, when you asked you, they asked me about that." And I'm like, "Snapchat? I know nothing about Snapchat. Google Snapchat." And they're like, so they literally kept saying all the questions that they got asked.
Yeah.
I walked into the room. They asked me, of course, hey, tell us about yourself, whatever. And they're like, "Okay, now we want to know if you're in touch with what's happening in the economy and stuff."
Yeah.
And then they asked me the Snapchat question. And in all honesty, while I knew what the question was, I hadn't thought about the answer.
Ooh.
So I'm sitting there and they're like, "Yeah, so Snapchat, what do you know about it?" I'm like, "Oh, you mean the social media app?" "Yeah, my video." They're like, "Yeah. What do you know about it right now?"
Yeah.
And because I typed Google, I was like, "Oh, their share price is lower than IPO."
Aibo.
And they're like,
"What is share price, man?"
That was the only thing that was on Google front page.
Okay.
And they said, "Okay, why do you think that is?" And I was like, "Ah, come on." I'm just a girl looking for a job. But I sat there and thought. And I was like, you know what? Snapchat is no longer the only app that does videos and short form. Instagram is hopping on and all these other platforms. So competition is what drove the price down.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Girl, you think it?"
Yeah.
I asked God to accompany. So it was serendipitous moment. And sure. I walked out of there with so much confidence.
Yeah.
My birthday came around and I was expecting a call.
Yes.
The call never came. And I said, "Lord,
Batum.
I asked you.
Batum.
And I did my best. What is going on?" The very next day, 26 July, I get a call. The lady says, "Is this Nompumelelo Mbonani?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure it is." She says, "I've got good news. You've got the job."
Ooh.
And I was just like, "Lord, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you." And even going into banking, I knew that banking was not the end, but a means to an end.
Yeah.
But I was happy because I told God I wasn't okay here, and He met me halfway. And I was out of there, and the rest then was for me to figure out, of course, with His help, what the actual thing is.
Yeah,
that is okay. That's
lovely. We're running out of time, but I can't This is like the most jealous. But waiting 2 hours of it, of just this conversation.
What have you got to lose?
So I wanna then zoom into this one in the little time that we have. Purpose Practitioners Club.
Yes.
That, tell us a bit about that then.
Purpose Practitioners Club is the answer to my struggle.
Yes.
So, you know, from varsity, even before I got into varsity, I was contending.
Yeah.
When I started working, I was contending, "Lord, surely you had a plan.
Yeah.
Surely you had an idea.
Yeah.
It can't be random. What is it?" And so I got into corporate, right? This big corporate. Now I work at the bank. Tapelo. Batuba, they smell like money.
Sure.
You don't even need to ask if they've got money. They smell like money.
You can tell.
They look like it.
Yo.
The cars in the basement. The English.
Sure.
And you would think, because on paper they look really good. On the outside they look really good. You would think these people have got it going on and they lack absolutely nothing.
Yo.
Oh, but almost every third person that I ran into asked me this question. "Hey, are you happy? Are you happy here? Is this the work that you would do if you had a choice?
Batu.
Is this the choice you would make?
Batu.
Right? And now I'm just like, is it written on my forehead that I'm actually in an existential crisis? What is going on?
Well, it seems like I'm carrying it around.
Also, I'm new here. I don't want to say the wrong thing to the wrong person. Yes. Next thing, I'm being called to a board. Mm. Like, oh, so you're not happy.
Mm.
Well, ooh, so And then they would open up to me and say, well, not for us.
Mm.
We're here to pay the bills.
Mm.
And our passions, something we do over the weekend, or something we just put on the back burner, we'll see it at retirement. But the common sentiments and theme was, these people are experiencing exactly what I'm experiencing.
Yes.
The only thing is they've resigned themselves to this life, but I'm on a search.
Yeah.
I'm on a pursuit.
Yeah.
And so one day I shared my story with the world. With the world, I mean LinkedIn.
Yes.
And I told them about that day that was supposed to be one of the happiest days of my life, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I could not believe the overwhelming amount of professionals that said, for me,
this
is me.
Mm.
What do we do?
Mm.
And then I was just like, Lord,
what
you are going to do now is give me the answer, because I'm not the only one that wants it at this point.
Yes.
There's a whole generation. Yes. There's a whole catalog of professionals. Help me out. And 1 April 2018, God came to me and said, this is the thing.
Mm.
Now, I was a bit frustrated. I was just like, I just asked you for my purpose.
Mm.
What is the thing of all these steps of this is how you discover, this is how you align, this is how you drive? Please, Booty.
Mm.
Just one answer.
Mm.
This was a multi-choice.
Yo.
A multi-choice question.
Yo.
Multiple answer.
Yo.
A, B, C, D.
Yes.
What is all of this? But God is like, the reason you were always frustrated with everyone saying, oh, just find your purpose, and not showing you how, is because I wouldn't trust the how to you. And so Purpose Practitioners Club literally is an organization whose aim is to help professionals engage and excel in any art, any discipline, and any profession that is aligned to their purpose.
Mm.
And why this is important is because just this June, Gallup released a State of the Global Workplace report.
Mm.
Listen to me. Global Workplace report.
Mm.
And they found that 77% of professionals worldwide are disengaged at work.
And I've
learned over the years of doing this work that it's not just their work that they're disengaged with, it's their core.
Yeah.
And when you're out of alignment with your core, of course everything else will struggle. When the core or that answer to your why is not answered, the how gets affected, the what gets affected.
Yeah.
Because that case is not getting your best.
Yeah.
And you are not getting the best out of it. And so it was my rally cry, I guess, or my way of saying, guys, there is a way for us to align our purpose, our profession.
Mm.
And I know that we are not vain, because in Ecclesiastes 3:22, when Solomon was comparing the life of an animal to the life of a man, saying, what is the difference? We are all born, we eat, we die at some point. And then he comes to an epiphany and he says, nothing is better than for us to find joy in the work we do, because that is our heritage.
Oh.
And the archaic definition of heritage is your allotted portion.
Yeah.
Your individual possession. It is everyone's portion to find joy in the work they do. And I tried to find the joy in everything else, but I only found joy in my purpose. And so I even took that further to say, nothing is better than for us to find our purpose, because in our purpose is the joy.
Mm.
And that purpose is our allotted portion.
Yeah. We could go on and on and on and on on that on its own. But yeah, time is the enemy. How do you relate to money?
I think I have a very good relationship with money.
So, nemali?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I have a good relationship with money.
Okay, okay.
Whether it is 10 rand or 10,000.
Yeah.
But none of my says who.
Yeah.
Yathandana.
Niyazwana wena nayo.
Niyazwana.
Oh my.
Mina lutho.
Yeah.
Niyazwana.
Okay.
I've got a good relationship with money, because I was raised by a mother who really knew how to strip the ranch.
Yeah, yeah.
And because she knew how to stretch the ranch, she instilled that principle in all of us. Delayed gratification is a thing I knew from when I was young.
Oh, nice.
Prioritizing is a thing I knew from when I was young because we didn't have much money. And so for us, for us, the whole idea of loans and credits, it was not a thing because my mom didn't have access to that. So we literally had to live below our means.
So
all the principles that are taught now where money is concerned, I learned them by force. I didn't even learn them where money is concerned particularly. It's just by way of living.
All right. 10 seconds. What advice with, I don't know why politicians like hindsight, but with hindsight, what advice would you give to your young Bumi?
Oh, man. And I don't want to sound too churchy or preach or anything, but I like the fact that you said hindsight because I'm saying this from a point of hindsight, right? There's a scripture, James 1 verse 4, if it's not 3. Count it all joy
when you fall into diverse,
fall into various trials.
Yeah.
Because the testing of your faith produces patience.
Yeah.
Then it says, I think this is verse 4, but let patience have
its course.
Work.
Yeah.
So that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I said I've got a good relationship with money.
Yeah.
Don't have a good relationship with pain.
Ooh.
I absolutely hate pain. I hate struggle. I hate trial.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, I'm realizing that if God is not the one that does the thing, he allows the thing. And the reason he does is because he wants us to be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And so to everybody who is currently in the thick of it, I just want to say, let patience have its perfect work.
Yeah.
Because the result, if you let it have its perfect work, because we sometimes rush through seasons, right? If you let it have its patient work, you will be patient and complete, lacking nothing. I could tell that to my younger self to say, Bumi, you need to fix your relationship with struggle and trial and pain because it's not there to harm you. It's there to help you.
10 years from now, we'll have this conversation again, but where is Bumi?
Yeah, we will. I'll probably have PhD. We'll have a lot to talk about.
Ooh, look at that. Ooh, sure. You just went for the very highest of the highest, eh? Hi, Bumi.
Sorry, the lights in my neighborhood just went
out. Nah, no problem. I was saying you went for the highest, the PhDs, the international born.
Lalela.
Hey.
Lalela.
Hey, Baton.
We are not here for games.
Hey.
No. No.
Sure. That's amazing. That's an encouragement on its own, eh? Yo, that's an encouragement on its own.
Now because I know exactly what I want to do with life, right? I know the contribution I want to make.
Yeah.
It'll be an easy thing.
Yes.
I think I already even have my dissertation in my mind or my thesis because I know what I want the world to look like.
Bumi, you've given us pressure enough. Please. So on a topic already. Wait. Please give us some time to breathe. You know,
I'm an overachiever. I'm sorry.
There's a young girl.
I haven't even applied to any school.
Look at that. There's a young lady. What would you say to her, struggling, going through the most, maybe about to give up, doesn't believe that things can happen. They've tried, they've prayed, they've given it their all. What's your 10 seconds to them?
When you think you've given it your all, please trust and believe you've got more to give. You really have. Even if you give crawling, even if you give taking naps and trying tomorrow, do whatever it takes. But the minute you think you've given it your all, trust me, there's a little bit more that you can give. A little bit more that you can give. And sometimes it takes a day at a time. Sometimes it takes a month at a time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter as long as you are giving what it takes.
We could deal. I think I'm going to just hold it right there. Ma'am, thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you for
this
having me.
This is the first of many.
This conversation.
The White King. It's the first of many. I promise you that much. You and I are still going to have these conversations. But what an inspiration. What a lovely inspiration you are. And may God continue to open doors, opportunities. And, you know, as you have impact in the world, may you grow your territory as well. And may you have more. It's the end of the year. Any message? For me, it's have a beautiful, restful holiday season. And please take some time out. That's from me to you.
Thank you. I'll do that.
Yes.
I'll do that. My message to everybody is hello.
Yeah.
Hello, December.
Yeah, bon aki December. We are here. We are within, right? But thank you, ma'am. Have a beautiful one. We shall chat to you again very soon.
You too.
Thank you so much. Of course, that was just simple me there. Wow, what a beautiful conversation. I really enjoyed that. Find her on all social media platforms. I'm sure she can help you find your purpose as well.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.